Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Talking About podcast. I am Sean Kennedy. With me on the line is Liberty Ballers' own Jackson Frank, and it's going to be a James Harden-centric episode. Jackson just wrote a great piece on libertyballers.com about Harden, so be sure to check that out. We're going to talk about that a little later in the pod. But Jackson, thanks for joining. How are you doing?
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you back on the pod. So yeah, we're going to focus on Harden. He's been kind of the him and Maxey both have been the primary talking points during the Sixers offseason, and Harden was a hot talking point because of his opting out. Like, what's the new contract going to be if he does come back as everyone expects? And now we have all these offseason workout videos and the team getting together, bonding, all the vibes being good. We're gonna discuss all that. But Jackson, I haven't spoken to you specifically about the contract since that was signed. So just to quickly recap for everyone out there, he signed a 1-1. It's $30 million for this season and a $35.6 million player option for next season. He obviously turned down the $47.4 million player option that he could have opted into for this season. So Jackson, just your overall thoughts on what transpired. What were you surprised at the 1-1 structure? What was your reaction to him opting out originally? Just give me your thoughts. I know you have some.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, right? Because it felt like the reporting was, you know, kind of not all over the place, but there were kind of some conflicting reports from a lot of different people that you felt were pretty reputable, right? Yeah. But, you know, it's like, I think Jake Fisher for a while was on, he was going to opt out and then do a 2+1 maybe, or a 3-year deal. And that never quite transpired. I'd imagine something that was entertained. It's not me discrediting Jake's reporting, but you know, at some point when this continued to drag on, Adam Aronson, who writes for the Rice Ricky Sanchez, kind of floated the idea of a 1+1 and really started, you know, predicting that would be what Harden would do. And so I don't know if I ever fully got on board with Adam, but obviously kudos to him. And he was the one that kind of introduced that idea to me. So I wasn't surprised necessarily when that was what, you know, was revealed to be. I think Shams, like the official terms of the deal didn't come out until like last week or 2 weeks ago, but Shams reported it maybe mid-July, if I recall. Maybe it was Woj. I can't remember who was first on it there. But I think it's probably a smart deal for Harden. He had a down year last year, was still an all-star. It does seem like some of his biggest naysayers kind of forget that part. Like, he was still very good last year, despite not being the MVP, you know, perennial MVP candidate that we'd become accustomed to. But obviously, you know, he wasn't at the level that, you know, most of the premier max players are at. But I think he'd certainly get back there. And so if he does, you know, he would opt out again, and he would, you know, get a pretty significant pay raise, I imagine. It seems like he wants to be in Philadelphia, just based on everything he's saying and the things he was, you know, willing to do to help make this team give it a deeper rotation. So, I think it's a good deal for both sides, honestly. And it gave the Sixers some flexibility in the short term, and it gives, you know, Harden some flexibility to kind of maybe to play his way back into a long-term security next season, wherever he wants, or moving forward wherever he wants to be. It seems like it's the Sixers, but if he returns to that top 10, top 8 level that, you know, he was at for, you know, almost a decade, then I would not be surprised at him that he has a lot of suitors. You can kind of, you know, and see where he would like to go. But it does seem like Philadelphia is the place he is kind of angling to be for a while.
Yeah, it does. The mutual love fest between him and Daryl seems to be real. It does seem to be getting along well with a lot of his new teammates, which is great. Yeah, I think those should be the expectations for people. So you mentioned the potential opt-out. Do you view the player option for next year as just like an injury insurance policy, or do you think say James has a similar year to last year where he still plays pretty well. He's maybe like a fringe all-star candidate, but not the dominant player of past years. Do you think he still would opt out then, or what do you think the bar is for opting out and seeking a new deal? And
yeah, that's a good question, right? Because it would be tough for him at that point, because if he has another year like last year, where like clearly he is a still a very good player, but one who is like notably removed from his MVP days, like there's less optimism, right? Because like there's less optimism moving forward, because everything that we've heard this year and during the offseason was that like he didn't have time to rehab last year, or he was focused on rehab, he didn't have time to play. And that was why maybe he took a step back, and he was always kind of managing the hamstring injury, and he'll be back to where he was physically next season. But if he plays the same way again, you don't have that caveat, right? And so you'd be pretty concerned about who Harden is over the next 3 or 4 years. So would he decline it and maybe take, you know, like a 385 or a 390, or would he opt in to try and maybe play his way back into big long-term money again? I think it's probably an insurance policy, like an injury policy, like you said, but because he has all the control in the situation. But it is a good question, right? Because like I said, if he plays like he did last year, there's not going to be that kind of, oh, well, he didn't have a full offseason, because we're going to talk about it. We've seen the videos. He looks good. He looks spry. It looks like he's been playing a lot, which is what he said he wasn't able to do last year. I think he said he didn't get to play any 5-on-5 last offseason, one, because it was a shortened offseason, and two, because he was rehabbing from a pretty serious hamstring strain or tear or whatever it was. I can't remember exactly the injury, but
yeah, a grade 2 hamstring strain is what they classified as.
So the just point being is that you wouldn't have, you know, that in your back pocket to say, oh, I didn't get, you know, and I'm not trying to frame it as he used an excuse, but it is a reasonable explanation.
It's a justification.
Next year you wouldn't have that, right? It'd be like, well, he's just a top 25 player now, because the hamstring strain is a very serious injury that you kind of fully put him into a different tier of player. So I view it as an insurance thing, but I do think there's still some risk for him there. But you know, at the end of the day, he's going to have $35 million available to him if he wants that, and there are far worse places to be. But again, it is worth noting that it is, you know, it, if he does play like he did last year, it puts him in a bit of a tricky spot for sure.
But not a guy unaccustomed to turning down a lot of money in an option, as we just saw, turning down the $47 million. So certainly willing to bet on himself, James Harden. You kind of laid it out. So that's a good segue into our next part of our conversation. The vibes have been great. It's as a Philadelphia 76ers fan, going from Ben Simmons offseason videos and trying to buy into any mid-range shot we see. And I actually saw one floating around earlier this week, and the Brooklyn fans trying to get on board with like guys going at 30% and Ben shooting an elbow jumper. And I know we were all talking about in the Slack, like, all those poor souls, like very, very glad we can move on from that period of our lives. But yeah, the Harden videos are popping, and he definitely looks good. He looks a lot slimmer. He's been pretty outspoken in a couple different pieces. One was with, I don't know how to, Adrian Ferodi of Help Time. I'm probably mispronouncing her name, so I apologize there. But Harden talked about like, hey, I'm entering my age 33 season. You have to alter your approach to things as you age. And he tweaked his diet and taking that more seriously. So he definitely seems to be in a more mature place about taking care of his body and everything. He started his off-season workout earlier than usual. There's all the videos about Sam Cassell running his training regimen. We saw the TikTok with him and Maxi going at it. There was the NBC Sports piece by Noah Levick about how Maxi and Harden have been really feeding off each other. They're playing one-on-one quite a bit. And like Maxi's, you know, the whole 1% better every day thing for Maxi really seemed to have invigorated Harden to some degree. So yeah, everything seems good, Jackson. I mean, how much are you buying the hype train on the James Harden revival, I guess, is the main question.
You know, I talked last year a lot about being optimistic that he would be a better player next year, just because of the things that I mentioned earlier, right? Like, it's, I think it's hard to overstate like how hindering it can be to have to rehab all summer in a shortened off season and not get to play and not get to adapt, you know, when you have the freedom of experimentation, right? Like it's one thing to be able to adapt in season, and players who do that like are really incredible. I think that's what, I mean, Harden has done that, and a lot of other stars and superstars have done it. That's what makes them so great, but it's easier to do it in the off season. So I talked about being optimistic that he could be a better player next year. I tend to take the same approach, basically any player that I don't buy much into offseason videos. You know, whether it's Ben or it's James Harden or it's Tyrese Maxey, whoever it is, they're fun to watch. I'm not, and I get why fans want to be encouraged by them. I'm not telling anyone else how to interpret them, but it's, for me, it's like a, I'll see it when I see it with Harden. And I think like I'm optimistic, but I'm not more optimistic now because I've seen, you know, some videos of him playing in LA and whatnot. But you know, I think I tweeted it last week or a couple weeks ago that the things I'm looking for with Harden once he does, you know, return to an NBA court, an NBA game, even if it's preseason, whatever it is, I want to see kind of that fluidity of movement as a driver, and then that pop on those step backs. Because if you go back and watch Harden, just watch some highlights from his pre-injury Brooklyn Nets tenure, and then, you know, even maybe his 2019-20 season with the Rockets, just kind of the fluidity with which he moved and the pop he had on those step back threes was like a totally different pace than it was last year. After he did suffer the injury back in June, and I think it, maybe in February as well of 2021. So those are the big things I'm looking for. And if I think someone asked, like, how would I be able to contrast those? And like I said, just go watch highlight videos of pre-injury. And I'm not saying he'll get all the way back there, but you can definitely see the difference. So to succinctly answer your question, I am encouraged by Harden's prospects next year, but the videos themselves are not the reason for it. It's just kind of everything I laid out previously. But the vibes do seem good, but also vibes can be fickle. We kind of saw it last year with the Sixers. The vibes were pretty good most of the year after the Harden trade. And even honestly, pre-Harden trade, I think, you know, Joe and that whole team did a really good job of not letting the Ben stuff affect them. But vibes, I think, are fickle. We saw how they kind of came crashing down in the final two games that Miami series, unfortunately. But it's not bad for the players to be hanging out and enjoying each other's company. So I feel like maybe I'm being too much of a naysayer and nerd.
So you're like, saying Joel Embiid being at Harden's wine release party is not a championship pretending a championship?
Or yeah, exactly. But it is a good. It's not a bad thing, I will say. So it's certain. You know, it does seem. I mean, those are the two most important players in the Sixers, and I do think it's a good thing, right? Like they had so little time to play together last year. I mean, they had, I think, 30 games, because Joe didn't play a couple in the playoffs because Harden played 33 of the Sixers. So 31 games in season trying to make a playoff run, and they looked pretty good. And so I'm excited for what they do next year. And it certainly seems like they enjoy each other, and it's always easier to build chemistry on the court when you enjoy each other's company. And just as in any job, right? Like, it's easier to work together in a job if you enjoy spending time with the person. So it's definitely a good harbinger for that partnership. But I don't want to overstate it, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's just about what you do on the court. But I think it's certainly a good thing, even if it's somewhat trivial in my eyes. But I don't want to over understate it too much.
Yeah, it's not the be all end all, but you do gain some value from learning each other's tendencies by working out together. And the fact that James has spent time with Joel and a lot of time with Maxey and PJ Tucker, and even he went to Vegas for a few days, and like guys like Paul Reed and Jaden Springer were involved in workouts with him. It's like that all matters to some degree. Like it can only help. So the fact that these things are taking place is great. And, you know, the fact that him and Joel seem to really been getting along, you know, whether it's the Hamptons party or a couple other things we've seen pop up, like that's good. You want to go in the foxhole with these guys in these high pressure situations. If you really do get along, it just gives you a little bit of a boost as in terms of team chemistry. I'm not saying Doc is going to revive the Ubuntu Celtics motto just because these guys are hanging out a little bit, but it certainly doesn't hurt. So yeah, I think regarding the videos, you said that we shouldn't put too much stock in them. I think the main takeaway is just that he's able, Harden himself is able to participate in all these things. And as you said earlier, it was a shortened offseason. This is actually the first time we've had a regular kind of starting point for the season and non-shortened offseason in a couple of years, ever since pre-COVID times. So that's important. And the fact that he's been, you know, able to go at full go pretty much. And Doc had the interview on the Vince Carter show earlier this week and talked about how the training staff said that James looks great. He himself saw him a week or so ago and said he looked great. So just everything looks good. Like, it seems like the hamstring is kind of fully behind him. And I think that's the main takeaway, is that a fully healthy James Harden will get a chance to see what that looks like on this team. Whereas that clearly wasn't the case last year. You talked about how his lift was affected and his jumpers and the step backs and everything. So hopefully that can be corrected and he can be more of the Harden of old, as you mentioned, and make a couple other tweaks to his game that you are going to talk about in our next section when we dive into your article. But yeah, I think encouraging is the right word. It's not anything that we should say, oh, he's definitely going to be this premier player because of these offseason videos. But the fact that he's playing in the offseason videos, if he wasn't, I think that would preclude any optimism of that sort. So just good to see him there and available.
And I would just play, like, I think the point about the full offseason is really important too, because, you know, Harden is a guy who for so many years had a ridiculous workload and barely missed games. And you think back to 2019-20 when, you know, that was the bubble season, right? And so he played into the second round and he had a big workload that year still. And then he had the shortened offseason. And then, you know, last year he finally missed extended time for, you know, like, I think the first time in a long time in his career. And then he tried to come back and had that big injury. And then last year, you know, he took more games off, right? You know, he missed 17 games. I think that was his most for like maintenance in a long time, maybe in his career. And so then he gets a full offseason. So I think that's really important. It's a good thing to note, right? Because he has two or three of the highest usage seasons in NBA history and never missed games for the most part. Like, that's got to wear on you. And so maybe it's one of those things where it ultimately wore on him too much. And this is who he's going to be moving forward, a very good player, but not, you know, not the MVP superstar. Or maybe it's like he just needed an offseason to decompress a little bit and get back on normal schedule and whatnot. But yeah, with the runs, I think the most encouraging thing is, as you said, he's playing, because he talked about not being able to do that last year. And clearly that's something that's important to him, as it is, I'm sure, with any NBA player, really. And then two, the fact that, like, you're seeing him kind of seek out some mid-range jumpers, right? Like, we've talked, I think everyone in Sixers land has talked about maybe trying to embrace the mid-range pull-up a little more. And you've seen a little bit of that. Again, you don't want to read too much into it. It's ironic now that we spent all these years analyzing a left-handed point guard shooting mid-range jumpers in the offseason, and here we are still doing it. But the thing is, you have more confidence, right, in James Harden being a good mid-range shooter than you do Ben. And so just the fact that he's seeking that a little more, because he did it so scarcely over the past 6-7 years, and especially, you know, of the Sixers last year. I think it was in my piece, like, on Cleaning the Glass, they had him with like 14 long mid-range jumpers with the Sixers between the playoffs and regular season across 33 games. And so long mid-range, just for anyone who's curious in Cleaning the Glass, is anything inside the three-point line but like kind of outside free throw range. So just the fact he's taking some of those shots, you know, and we don't know how often he's doing it, but the fact that we've even seen in the brief videos, as the word you said, is encouraging, Sean.
Yeah. Well, at least we can be 100% certain that James should be shooting with his left hand. And that was never the case for Ben. So
that's a reasonable point as well.
Slightly different in that perspective, but yeah, your point about his usage and the kind of tread he put on the tires, just to put it in perspective, his first 7 years in Houston, he played at least 72 games in each of those seasons. And then you add playoffs on top of that. There was a 3-year stretch where he played 81, 82, and 81 regular season games. And as you said, like, his usage was sky high, like historically high usage numbers while playing in basically every game and playoffs.
And even the year that he didn't play at least 72, that was the shortened year in 2019-20. He played 68 of 72 regular season games, and then he played 12 more playoff games. So, I mean, the guy was just, I mean, the thing that I, you know, to go on a little bit of a tangent, people would be like Harden wasn't well conditioned and all these things, like during his prime, like that was always his issue. I never thought that was like the dude was a freaking Iron Man. His issue was that like he didn't quite have a varied enough approach in his offense in the playoffs. And that was kind of what buried him a lot. And obviously some of the no-shows, but it was never that he was like not well-conditioned. I mean, that the guy is about as high usage and well-conditioned as you can be in NBA history among high usage initiators. So I think there are reasons to criticize Harden's playoff foibles, but it was never because he like didn't have enough in the tank. He might've had too much in the tank at times.
Yeah. He's just not the prototypical like body type for what we think of for like NBA wings or whatever. He's just a little bit stockier, a little bit more of a like a sturdy build, like low to the ground kind of, which is why he's so good at post defense for a guard. He's like one of the better post defenders. So yeah, he's just not the lean like tall 6'7" muscular guy that, you know, we kind of think of when we think of like well-conditioned athletes, I guess, for NBA players. But yeah, he's certainly proven over the years that he can, you know, be there each and every night and perform at a high level with an incredibly high usage. And yeah, you're not doing that if you're not in great conditioning. So we saw that when he first came to Philadelphia, and he's like running the stadium steps after the games and everything. So I imagine that's the kind of stuff he was doing back in his Houston days, but he just wasn't able to do it nearly as much because of the injury last year and the hamstring. So that is something that hopefully is in the past, and he can go back to being, you know, available more consistently and more importantly able to play at whatever the maximum level is for him approaching year 33 or age 33 season. So he's not going to be the player he was
year 33. Even LeBron is envious on that one.
Yeah. The only guy that might take a crack at that might be LeBron if he wants to be there for his entire kid's career. We'll see. But yeah, so we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor. And when we come back, we're going to dive into Jackson's recent article on Harden for Liberty Ballers.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. And we're back. So, Jackson, you wrote for Liberty Ballers. How can James Harden return to form inside the arc? So let's start with where you started in your piece. Last year, first time in close to a decade that he shot below 50% inside the arc. Is this something that we should just chalk up as injury related? And now that the hamstring injury is behind him, we can expect his results inside the arc to revert more to career averages. What was your overall takeaway in your research and writing the piece?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was trying to determine, right? I think I conclude near the end that like if he is back to the level he was athletically prior to this injury, then a lot of my suggestions and analysis is kind of not all for naught necessarily, but like doesn't carry a ton of relevancy. Because he can just play with the approach that he had previously and go back to who he was. It's very possible that he's passed the hamstring injury, but it's also very possible the hamstring injury just changed who he was athletically and he has to adapt. And so my goal was to not just be like, just sit on my hands and be like, yeah, Harden's past the injury. He's going to go back to being a 53-54% shooter inside the arc. Let's just let that happen. My goal was to be like, okay, maybe he's past the injury, but what if it's still, you know, fundamentally changed who he is athletically and how he can operate as a scorer? What do we do? How do we go from there? So I'm kind of playing both sides a little bit more. So what I'm trying to do is just like offer solutions to, if we, like, to, yes, he could be past the injury, but what if the injury still kind of altered who he can be? So that was kind of what I was trying to, you know, answer in my article, if that makes sense.
And I think, I guess your conclusion for who he could be is a guy that takes more mid-range shots, which seems counterintuitive for someone that was so synonymous with Morey ball while in Houston, basically threes, layups, and nothing else. So you would have to go pretty far down the line for players you would think would thrive in the mid-range before you would arrive at James Harden. But that I think that was kind of the conclusion that you drew, is that, you know, not that he should be taking a ton of mid-range shots, but he should be taking more than he has been recently, and just add that as an additional tool in his arsenal that's at his disposal next year. So what do you think specifically he should be doing in terms of mid-range games? I know you mentioned the floater a little later in your piece. What are parts of Harden's game that you saw that he used in the past that you think he should get back to or just use more often?
Yeah, I think it's just, to me, I'm not a biomechanics expert. I like to think I know a little bit about how, you know, muscles and tissue work. And so my thing was that, like, we're talking about the inside the arc decrease, right? But we saw him also shoot his worst mark ever from three in his NBA career last year. And I think some of that was because, like, the step back is his go-to, right? I mean, I wouldn't say he popularized it, but he kind of, you know, made it his own, right? That an iconic shot for him. And that requires so much, like, lower body force and stability, like the capacity to generate space on the step back and then immediately pop up and generate forward momentum. That's a lot on your core strength, your hamstrings, your calves, like, I just think Harden not having that fully healthy hamstring last year, like, you saw the pop be less, you saw the space creation be less abundant.